I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Marcy Natan, National President of Hadassah. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mavina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. Or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. We are approaching the 13th anniversary of the Two Jewish Radio Show, our bar mitzvah show, if you will. And it is more than a little hard to believe that we've been providing the finest in Jewish radio experience for 13 years now, or nearly. I'm not sure if it would be appropriate on that occasion to declare, "Today I am a man," or something like that on the air, but I promise we'll have a very special show for that upcoming anniversary. If you have suggestions for topics of discussion or a favorite show or interview you want to revisit, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, twojewishradio18@gmail, and let us know your suggestions. Amazing. 13 years, and we didn't even have to learn a new Haftorah. Well, today is an interesting day on the Jewish calendar, and one well worth discussing. This is the commemoration of the 9th of Av, the fast day of Tisha B'Av, which remembers the destruction of both the First Temple by the Babylonians nearly 2,600 years ago, and that of the Second Temple by the Romans 1,945 years ago, as well as the burning of Jerusalem and the end of the independent Jewish state both times. It's also the anniversary of the fall of Beitar, ending the last great Jewish revolt against Rome by Bar Kokhba in the year 135, and of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain, which became fully effective on this Hebrew calendar date in the year 1492. Altogether, a very dark day in Jewish history. By tradition, this is a day Jews fast, not eating or drinking, remembering all of this loss. In Israel, many people congregate in the areas of the Kotel, the Western Wall, holiest place on earth for Jews, although it was just the retaining wall holding up the sacred Temple Mount, upon which our ancient temples stood. It's a most unusual holy day, marked with mournful dirges called kinot, and both evening and morning, the chanting of the deeply tragic book Echa, Lamentations from the Bible, a recollection of the loss and destruction that were inflicted upon our people multiple times on this date. It has been a day of true holocausts for our people many times over the centuries. Now, technically, the ninth day of the month of Av was yesterday, but no fast day, except for Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, can actually be observed on the Sabbath. So the fast and its observances are moved to begin Saturday night, and therefore they conclude tonight, Sunday night at sundown. Interestingly, the Reform movement in Judaism actually took Tisha B'Av, away from the calendar. That is, it removed it, more or less. Reform rabbis believe that by so deeply mourning the destruction of the temple, where in biblical and ancient times ritual animal sacrifice formed the central aspect of Jewish practice, we were maintaining that we actually wish to restore the rituals of the temple. Certainly, that was not what the Reform movement desired in those days, and it still isn't. Nor is it what most traditional Jews, conservative and orthodox, actually desire, if the truth is told. We have evolved a very long way since the days when the appropriate form of worship of God, prayer that is, was the offering of grain or small birds or an occasional sheep as an elaborate form of sacred barbecue. And very few Jews today truly desire to restore the ancient temple. For those who see Tisha B'Av as a day to mourn the destruction of our ancient Jewish state, well, for 67 years now, we have had a newly revived Zion that welcomes us. Israel is an accomplished fact, and to spend so much energy on mourning what is gone, but has now been restored for more than a generation, seems odd. So why is Tisha B'Av observed at all? Why has it returned to the Reform movement, too, over the last few decades? The answer lies in my people's deep understanding of history, our ability to understand that what happened once, or in this case multiple times, must be remembered and respected. For Jews, history is never truly gone. It continues always to affect our present and likely our future. We are shaped by the collective experiences of our people, and remembrance is the first step towards understanding that. As the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidism, said famously, forgetfulness leads to exile, while remembrance is the secret of redemption. That is, when we forget, we move away from God, exile. But when we remember, we have the opportunity to return to holiness and goodness. And if Passover is the history feast, well, Tisha B'Av is a history fast. We do well to remember the reasons that tradition attributes for the destruction of these two temples so long ago. The first, the rabbis tell us, was destroyed because of idolatry, the worship of false gods, moving away from the practice of worshiping God. But the second temple was destroyed as the result of sinat chinam, baseless hatred of one Jew for another. In other words, we allowed our internal disputes to fester, and so to destroy Jewish unity. Where we have always had respectful disagreement in the search for truth and justice, we instead turned to pure hostility of one Jew towards another, of one Jewish group towards another Jewish group. And that led to destruction. This remains a powerful lesson. When our community differs on substantive issues, as we will, as some aspects of the American Jewish community seem to be doing right now over the Iran nuclear deal, we must always remember that we are one people. Disagreement is natural and healthy. Hatred, vituperation, and attacking the integrity of the individuals on the other side, or their groups, these are not. Tisha B'Av reminds us of the dangers of this sort of situation and its consequences for our people in the past. And we often need just that sort of reminder to move us back to the proper path. To play us in this morning, here's the Israeli singer Pe'er Tassi and his best-known song, Derech HaShalom, literally, Peace Road.
Tel Aviv lifne hatzor taruach lo rotza linshor Valachut lo marpa oti honeke Bevet cafe ben ashkunot Od lo kibu et haorot Al kisei ashan levada yoshevet Al lo batuach ma lomar Im kedai bichlal lageshet לסגת ורוח באה מן הים היא משליחה מבט קטן אותי מזמינה לשבת היא מזמינה הפוך לשנינו ורק מתלוננת על החום איזה חום אולי נזוז שואלת כמה מדירה סחורה ממש קרוב לדרך השלום נזמין חשבון, הלילה לא הולכים לישון בתל אביב אחרי חצות עולים בחדר מדרגות
That was Pe'er Tassi and his hit song Derech HaShalom. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Marcy Natan, National President of Hadassah, will explore the challenges and controversies that the Venerable Women's Organization is facing now. Find out what they are and how they're solving them when we come back in a few moments on To Jewish.
Everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's famous Taste of Judaism program, now in its 16th year, offers an exploration of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, taught by our rabbis. Call 327-4501 for more information and to register today. Taste of Judaism is an exciting opportunity to learn about Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. The classes are free and open to all, and we feed you too. We have daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and this year in Suarita as well. In partnership with the Tucson Hebrew Academy, the whole family can learn at the Taste of Judaism family class. And we're thrilled to offer American Sign Language Interpretation, ASL, for one of the sessions. Remember, there are no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 327-4501 or email mila@templeemmanueltucson.org. That's Taste of Judaism, 520-327-4501, a fun way to learn about Judaism. Don't miss it.
We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Marcy Natan is the national president of Hadassah, the premier Jewish women's organization for, a little more than a century now. She was the national treasurer of Hadassah prior to that from 2006 to 2010 and created Hadassah's single consolidated budget, helping streamline financial planning at the venerable organization. Resident of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, she first went to Israel in 1970, has since been there more than 40 times. She has an undergraduate degree in early childhood education and was trained and formerly served as a divorce mediator. To me, these are great preparations for working in a Jewish organization where people often behave like very young children and sometimes have terrible personal relationships. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you. Let me say, although I lived for many years in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and served as a region president while in that community, my husband and I are now based in Manhattan.
I understand. Slightly larger place than Lancaster, which is a very nice place, too, by the way. I've been there. Hadassah is an important Jewish organization. It's one of the first names of Jewish organizations that anybody hears, and it's been facing some of the same challenges and some different challenges that other organizations have faced. Can you talk about sort of your global perspective on Hadassah at this point?
Hadassah is a very fulsome organization in that we are serving not only to create a connection between American Jewish women and Israel, but also to educate them, advocate on behalf of Israel, and create programming here so that we try as an organization to create a new voice for the word Zionism. We're terribly concerned about the very negative implications of that word in today's society. We face, of course, all of the challenges that come with trying to attract the next generation of extremely busy women to participate in any kind of organizational activity. And we have not one, but actually two hospitals in Israel, both located in Jerusalem. And we are actually the owners, the creators and owners of those hospitals. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about them as well.
Indeed, we will. We will talk much more about the hospitals and Hadassah and as an organization when we come back in a few moments with Marcy Natan, the national president of Hadassah, in just a few moments here on Two Jewish. We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, People don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from FlavorArt in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio 18. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from there or from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We welcome our Mivi non-Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
And welcome back from Israel.
Thank you.
So today's beginning of Tisha B'Av, the day of fasting and mourning, the destruction of the temple, which is a very powerful and sad day, but that's followed in Israel by a unique holiday that we don't really have outside of Israel. Well, kind of we do. Would you please explain?
Yes, so Tu Be'av, actually, it's a very, you know, another special holiday that was also it's the reunion of Shevet Binyamin, if I remember right. So you remember this, of course, Rabbi.
Remember. They made up something, yes.
Yeah, they made up something. But it's a day for reconciliation.
That's correct.
And also, if it used to be, if someone would like to pick his fiancé, I would say, he will come and he will... Do you know the tradition is to...
Not really. Wait a minute. What do you do?
Yeah. Anyway, so it was back then.
I see.
But,
okay.
Yeah,
they used to grab.
Very romantic, by the way. Very romantic.
To carry off your fiancé.
But it was. The source of it is was because Shevet Binyamin was apart and they could not marry with
the
Shevet Binyamin.
The tribe of Benjamin was written out because of some acts that they committed way back
in history.
In the time of the judges.
So in order to overcome it, segregate the Shevet Binyamin, so all the girls will dress with white and all of them, and you can't tell who is from where. And
right, to mix all the mixed people. So they all dressed in white so that everybody looked anonymous. Everybody was from the same tribe, and you were just picking out the girl based on how she looked. Not how she dressed and not by what tribe she was from.
Yeah. And
it allowed the tribe of Benjamin to perpetuate
itself. And everyone
would
be able to, you know, choose his wife.
So all of this historical background on Tu B'Av doesn't basically cover the fact that today it's kind of Israeli Valentine's Day.
It's the Israeli Valentine's Day without the hallmark making money out of it.
No cards.
But, you know, there is a...
But I think the florists do very well.
The florist?
Yeah, they sell flowers on Tu B'Av.
For sure. But there is a lot of different festival and Tu B'Av festival, a huge music festival that's basically how I used to, as a teenager, used to celebrate.
Go to a concert.
Go to a concert with Ellie.
Of course. Of course, yeah. He knew better than not to take you to a concert.
Yeah, so...
So it's a fun day, great, and people go out to dinner and they do pretty much the same things.
Same, it's the Israeli-Jewish Valentine's
version
day.
But no saints and no arrows and no cupids.
But Boaz and Ruth and, you know, all these great stories.
Very nice. Boaz and Ruth, who we celebrate on Shavuot, but maybe it was really Tu B'Av when they got together.
Probably, but there is a relationship.
We will... Talk next week. Thanks so much, Oshrat.
Thank you.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about European anti-Semitism and the changes in Europe and the sort of Muslim-Christian-European tension that has existed for a very long time. Let's bring it up to date to a greater degree.
So the Arab presence in Europe dates back to the 8th century when the Arabs controlled the Iberian Peninsula and parts of southern Italy and sometimes Sicily and sometimes other places.
Even parts of southern France. I mean, right. It was complicated.
But then there was a bigger, although differently located, Ottoman presence in Europe for a good 500 years. And one of the last places in Europe that was an Ottoman outpost was Thessaloniki, sort of the capital of northern Greece, the natural capital of the Balkans, a thriving port, a big metropolitan, highly cultured city.
Also called Salonika. I was there actually this year in
right.
February.
And at one point in history, for a couple of centuries, Thessaloniki was the only major city in Europe where a majority of the population was Jewish. Jews were not a tiny minority. They were like maybe not more than 50%, but at 38% or something, they were the biggest of many minority groups. There
right.
were Turks, there were Greeks, there were Armenians.
Very heterogeneous.
There were
city
Serbs,
altogether.
There were Macedonians. But
right?
Jews were the biggest group, and Ladino was the common language of the marketplace. So this city, which still has a lot of Ottoman characteristics, the Turks have no visions of reconquering it, but it was the homeland of Ataturk. So there's an important, it's almost a pilgrimage site in the eyes of Turks. And there is still a small Jewish community in what was once the Jerusalem of the Balkans. And I have a good friend there who recently discovered, thanks to Facebook, this is an amazingly touching story, a cousin in Los Angeles whose grandmother was the sister of her grandfather. This grandmother was shipped off to Auschwitz, and she survived. The grandfather stayed and fought with the partisans in the mountains of northern Greece, and eventually they defeated the Germans, and they left. And then most of these partisans also fought in the Greek Civil War. And apparently, according to my dear friend there, when the survivors came back, they were looked down on by the Jews who had fought in the resistance and who had not gone to the camps, as if somehow they'd given up or something. So this woman's grandmother got married to a local guy and emigrated to the States almost immediately. And she has a grandson who's approximately the same age as my friend in Thessaloniki. And he and I have already gotten in touch via Facebook because I know not only his cousin of his generation, but her father I knew very well for most of his life. And even her grandfather I met once or twice for lunch when he was an old man. But that is the brother of this guy's grandmother who is an Auschwitz survivor.
Wow. You know, it's extraordinary. I went to Shabbat services in Thessaloniki, as we'd spoken off mic. And it's remarkable because in that, the one continually operating synagogue there, they have plaques from all of the synagogues, which were, you know, there was a Spanish one, there was a Portuguese one, there was a Converso synagogue, there were all of these different synagogues. They're all gone now, destroyed during the Holocaust, but the survivors make up the core of this community still. It's an extraordinary thing. Great story. Thank you, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, you'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none.
From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. The children of Israel are sitting at the foot of Mount Sinai. You can hear only a subdued murmur among them, but you can feel the tension in the air. For hours now, Moses has been on the top of the mountain, hidden from the people's gaze by clouds wafting around its top. Sometimes the clouds darken and thunder rolls down. In spite of the warm weather, this causes a shudder among the waiting masses of Jews. The end of the day is approaching. Dusk begins to set in when suddenly a figure emerges through the clouds, walking down the steep mountainside carrying a heavy load. It is Moses at last. Moses sets down his load and raises his hands. "Friends," he says, "friends, it was hard work, and I have done my best. I negotiated with God. I used every possible argument, every trick I could think of, and I think I was successful. The good news is, I brought him down from 15 to 10. The bad news is, adultery is still in." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. This week we read the second portion in the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy in the Torah, the remarkable Sedra of Va'etchanan. This portion includes truly spectacular texts. The Shema, the central statement of God's oneness in the world. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Hear Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Followed immediately by the Ve'ahavta, the commandment to love God with all of our hearts, mind, and strength. As if that were not enough honor for one Torah portion, it also includes the recitation of the Ten Commandments, the Aseret HaDibrot, for the second time in the Torah. If you were to rank Torah portions, you could easily put Va'etchanan near the top, simply for quality of content. After all, a portion that includes the essence of Jewish monotheism, the Shema, and the Ten Commandments, centerpiece of all Western ethics, is a pretty spectacular weekly parsha by anyone's standards. It is no accident that this powerfully affirming portion is read the week after Tisha B'Av, on Shabbat Nachamu, the Sabbath of Consolation, for we take comfort in our knowledge that morality and holiness ultimately bring justice. So what more can we possibly learn about these most famous texts of our tradition? The Shema itself is a really simple sentence. Listen, Israel, God is your Lord. There's only one God. A straightforward statement, one that should be easy to both understand and accept. Wholeness, holistic oneness. So simple, in fact, anyone can understand and embrace it. Although, of course, simple and true ideas often struggle for acceptance in this world. Still not a complex concept, oneness. In truth, well over 3,000 years since we Jews first articulated the idea that God is one, much less than half the world's population actually believes in the oneness of God, at least officially. But it is the text that follows the Shema in Parshat Va'etchanan, our portion this week, the Ve'ahavta, that is more subtle, in many ways more intriguing. For in that passage, we are commanded to love God. Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha, love the Lord your God with all your mind, soul, and heart. You know, many things in life can be commanded, but love, it seems to be, is distinctly not one of them. So what does the Torah mean when it says we are commanded to love God? It's a strange idea, but a very powerful one. Love is essentially a kind of unconditional way of giving, of focusing attention and caring on another being. Loving God means paying attention to God, to God's existence in our world, to God's oneness, God's moral code for us. In this case, we express our love of God, our ahava, by demonstrating that we have learned how to listen, shma. If we truly listen, then we will know that we must act ethically. In essence, loving God means that we are obligated to listen to and thus follow God's mitzvot, to live ethical lives, following the commandments, and to do so with energy and commitment. It also means that being good, morally good, is a form of love, perhaps the purest form of love. May we all find a way to express that love through the righteous actions of mitzvot, and so we can come to affirm God in our world. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Marcy Natan, National President of Hadassah, will explore the challenges and controversies that the Venerable Women's Organization is facing now. Find out what they are and how they're solving them when we come back in a few moments on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us?
The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
There were three deaths this week that we report with regret. The first two leave the art scene deeply diminished. The other is a mostly unsung hero who saved Tel Aviv for Israel. You'll learn more in a few moments. Our first loss was a past guest of Two Jewish, the remarkable Theodore Bekel, Emmy Award-winning, Academy Award and Tony Award-nominated actor, famed folk singer, who performed the role of Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof more than anyone, over 2,000 times worldwide.
If I were a rich man, yabba-bibba-bibba-yabba-bibba-bibba-bum, all day long I'd biddy-biddy-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard, yabba-bibba-bibba-yabba-bibba-bibba-bum. If I were a biddy-biddy-rich, Yiddle, diddle, 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 man.
Theodor Bekel was born in Vienna and named for Theodor Herzl, another Viennese Jew, founder of modern Zionism. Bekel's family name had originally been Cohen, but there were other Cohens in their shtetl near Bukovina, and his great-grandfather took a sidur, a prayer book, randomly pointed at a sentence that read, B'nai Yisrael Kodesh L'Adonai, the children of Israel are holy to God. He then took the first letter of each of those Hebrew words, and Bekel became the family name. After the Anschluss in 1937, when the Nazis took over Austria, the Bekel family fled to British Mandate Palestine. Theo Bekel lived on a kibbutz, but he started acting while in his teens with the pioneering Habima Theater in Tel Aviv, and as one of the founding members of the Kameri Theater, both still famous. In 1945, Bekel moved to London to study at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. There, he was cast by Laurence Olivier in Streetcar Named Desire. His film debut was in the classic film The African Queen with Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn. Theodore Bekel originated the role of Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music on Broadway, and Rodgers and Hammerstein even wrote the song Edelweiss specifically for him to sing in his folk singer style.
Edelweiss, every morning you greet me, small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me.
Bekel appeared in many film and TV roles as a wide variety of ethnicities: Hungarians, Germans, Russians, Bulgarians, Italians, Southerners from America, and even occasionally as a Jew. Theo Bekel took over the role of Tevye from Zero Mostel in 1967, and he never really stopped playing Tevye. I saw him perform in place of Topol, the Israeli actor, in the film version of the classic Jewish musical based on Shalom Aleichem's story, back in 2009, and Bekel, although less mobile, was still great. But it was as a folk singer of Hebrew, Yiddish, Russian, English, and American songs that Theodore Bekel became a household name in America in the late 1950s and 60s. He was a wonderful interpreter, especially of Yiddish songs.
Ich bin mir am Mädel in die Jorn, was hast du mir den Kopf verdreht? Was hast du mir den Kopf verdreht? Ich wollte schon lange Galle geworden und öfter Tage Hassene gehabt. Ich wollte schon lange Galle geworden und öfter Tage Hassene gehabt.
Theodore Bekel sung many classic folk songs, protest songs, songs in support of oppressed Soviet Jews. He even parodied the folk song genre beautifully.
And I used to go there and spend money I didn't have on champagne I didn't want and hate myself. And out of this hatred came a song.
When you hear Russian songs, do you suffer? Does your heart start to pound in your chest? If you do, then come down to the Kretschma. It costs plenty, but it's from the best. And there is singing, and there is dancing, and the Russian vodka is all right. Come to the Kretschma, that's where you catch ma. Drinking vodka every night.
Theodore Bekel continued working for good causes, performing on stage, recording small and large screen performances up until his last years. A proud, active, committed, engaged, extremely talented, brilliant, and accomplished Jew, Bekel was a unique treasure, and he will be missed. The other passing this week was the great American author E.L. Doctorow, author of Ragtime, Billy Bathgate, The March, and 10 other novels, often historical in nature, but in his own unusual ways. Doctorow is a unique voice in literature, never satisfied, always seeking new combinations and approaches in language, winning many major awards by somehow changing his voice and style with every book. Edgar L. Doctorow was actually named for Edgar Allan Poe by his Jewish immigrant parents. Poe was a favorite of his father's. Actually, said Doctorow, he liked a lot of bad writers, but Poe was our greatest bad writer, so I take some consolation from that. My dad died many years ago, Doctorow continued. My mother lived into her 90s, and I remember asking her in her old age, I finally dealt with the question of my name, do you and Dad know you named me after a drug-addicted, alcoholic, delusional paranoid with strong necrophiliac tendencies? And my mom said, Edgar, that's not funny. It is, actually. Very Jewish, indeed. The author of a dozen novels, three volumes of short fiction, and a stage drama, as well as essays and commentary on literature and politics, E.L. Doctorow is widely lauded for the originality, versatility, and audacity of his imagination. In the book that made him famous, Ragtime, back in 1975, set in and around New York as America hurtled toward World War I, the war arrives on schedule, but actions from many of the characters, both fictional and non-fictional, including Harry Houdini and Emma Goldman, were largely invented. Doctorow's unique way of mixing history and creativity has never been imitated successfully, perhaps because he was, well, a true literary genius. And our final loss this last week was an American World War II fighter pilot named Lou Lennart, a Jewish guy born in Hungary whose family fled persecution and settled in Pennsylvania when he was a kid. Lennart enlisted in the Marines, talking his way into flight school, and saw extensive combat in World War II, ending it as a captain. In early 1948, he helped smuggle planes to Israel to help it defend itself against invading Arab armies. And on May 29th, 1948, a large Egyptian military force had advanced to within 16 miles of Tel Aviv. Israel gambled its whole air force, all of four planes, in an attack on the Egyptian advance columns. As the most experienced pilot, Lou Leonard led the attack, backed by Eitzer Weissman, later the president of Israel, and two other pilots. The stunned Egyptian troops, who had been assured the Israelis had no aircraft, stopped their advance and retreated. Subsequent news reports hailed Leonard as the man who saved Tel Aviv, which he actually was. Leonard died last week in Renana, Israel, at the age of 94. May his memory and those of Theodore Bekel and E.L. Doctorow remain a blessing. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Marcy Natan, is the national president of Hadassah. She has served in that capacity. Her term continues through December 31st of this year. She was Hadassah's national treasurer previously and has spent, well over 40 years serving this important and really central Jewish organization for women. She has an undergraduate degree in early childhood education, was trained and served as a divorce mediator, and has been active as a volunteer for 4 decades. Hadassah is the Women's Zionist Organization of America and was founded in 1912 by the famed Henrietta Zold, first to create the Hadassah Hospital in Israel and then to serve many other functions. So what do you think of the name of the show?
First, I have to say, in my mind, you cannot be too Jewish. You know, they used to say you can't be too thin or too rich. You can be too thin. And after a while, you know, how many meals can you eat a day?
That's right.
But you can never be too Jewish.
Thank you so much. That's kind of the point. I really appreciate that. Hadassah is known for the Hadassah Hospital. I'm going to kind of go right at it. There have been significant financial challenges for the Hadassah Hospital. The medical world has changed dramatically over the years. Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, the founding of Hadassah Hospital and what the true situation is today?
Okay. So Hadassah Hospital is an outgrowth of the efforts of the famed Henrietta Zold to bring medical care to what was then Palestine and became the State of Israel. It is not just the premier hospital in Israel, but set the course for medicine across the State of Israel. The fact that the medical system in Israel is based on a Western concept of what a hospital should look like and how it should perform and how its doctors and nurses and other staff should be trained is truly a result of the efforts of Hadassah, and we're unbelievably proud of that. Having said that, it is very true that the hospital has faced significant challenges in the last couple of years, in good part because the medical system in Israel and the way their health funds operate make it very challenging for any hospital that does not receive government funding or is already owned by one of those health funds to have be able to maintain itself, its operational expenses. And it is with great pride that I say that about a year ago, we signed an agreement with the government of Israel that is in place until the year 2020, assuring that both the government and HWZOA, Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization of America, will contribute funding to allow this hospital to make the necessary changes so that it can be more fiscally sound without all this extra support. Why so proud? Because it is such an amazing acknowledgement of the role of Hadassah and the importance of diaspora Jewry for Israel that the government was willing to put its funds into a hospital that it does not own, that is indeed, until today, owned by Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization.
So that's a unique status, and it really, because of course, not only predates the State of Israel, it predates the British mandate in Israel. It goes back to the early days of the founding of Hadassah before World War I. When Henrietta Szold saw that there was really no modern hospital at all in pre-war Palestine, she was energized to create this entity. Is it just an anomaly that will eventually end up becoming part of the Israeli hospital system?
Let's say, in one way, of course, it is part of the Israeli hospital system. And one of the most interesting discussions that we had when we were working on the agreement was that there was no one sitting at the table that ever debated the fact that Jerusalem could not exist without Hadassah Hospital. What we were fighting for was the ability to ensure that our hospital would continue to be an academic medical center and would be a hospital where we can say that most of the research papers that come out of Israel come out of Hadassah, more than Weizmann Institute, more than any other single hospital in Israel. And to ensure that we were able to keep it on that level really was the reason that we were so adamant about not allowing it to become, as you put it, just another part of the hospital system. Now, having said that, I will say that in the early days of Hadassah, we had hospitals across the country. And over the years, as the State of Israel developed into a modern, functioning, well-run country, we turned most of those hospitals back over to the state. They were capable of maintaining them and growing them, and certainly there are fine hospitals in Tel Aviv and in other parts of the country. So we know that we made the right move, so to speak. However, our academic center, which includes the medical school, the nursing school, a school of public health, the dentistry school, and a school of rehabilitation, that shining star, the jewel in our crown, would remain part of Hadassah. It's sure. Our way of being able, as American Jews, to have a really meaningful hands-on connection with the State of Israel.
A very important element. I want to note that I have a warm place in my heart for Hadassah because when I was, 15 or 16 years old, my first singing gigs before I became a cantor were singing the national anthems of Israel and the Star Spangled Banner for various Hadassah chapters around Los Angeles for $25. So Hadassah had obviously a terribly challenging period of time in the wake of the whole Madoff scandal. I'm sorry to bring up, bad and painful subject, but nonetheless a very important one in the history of the organization. Hadassah did nothing wrong, of course, but the challenge of dealing with that was very important. Can you talk a little bit about what took place and also, most importantly, what it has meant for Hadassah to get past that?
I'm going to start with something that you'll wonder, how can you begin there?
That sounds very rabbinic of you, by the way.
Yeah, okay. We were extremely fortunate. Hadassah had decided prior to Madoff that in order to be fiscally responsible, we needed to cut our budget significantly. And we made some really very significant cuts in the budget over that year period. You mentioned when we started that I was the former treasurer, and it was during that period of time. And so when Madoff hit, what happened was it threw us back to where we had started, which was not good, but it at least did not then put us in a position where we were, over the brink, so to speak. We watched so many important charities literally go out of operation because they lost so much. The other reason that I say we were so fortunate is that we've always had a diversified portfolio. And so although it was a very significant loss, it was not, it did not wipe us out. Part of the reason that we looked to find a solution to maintaining Young Judea as a vital and strong entity was because, we were making decisions about where we could put our now limited finances. What we lost at the time was the ability to maintain a lot of our U.S.-based initiatives. And so we had wonderful young leaders program that we closed. We had a group of we had something called Hadassah Leadership Academy, a two-year program. At the end of the 2 years, the participants got a trip to Israel, and we had a group that were all but, packed to go when Madoff hit, and that group never made the trip to Israel. Mm-hmm. Wow. We have, however, in this last year, looking at what the best was of that Hadassah Leadership Academy and created the Hadassah Leadership Fellows. They also are studying in a two-year program, and I will tell you, they started with the trip to Israel. So they're still in their finishing their two-year term, and we are now actually looking for young women who are, or when I say young women, who can be able to give some time over the next couple of years, have the wonderful experience of traveling to Israel with Hadassah, studying Judaism, studying Zionism, and spending a great deal of time with other like-minded women. So we've been able to re-energize that type of program, just as an example. We've also come out with some new programs. So Know Your Worth, which is a program designed for women who are either due to the loss of a spouse or just the fact that they have never really developed the ability to manage their own financial assets. It is a program to train them so that they can indeed feel secure, that they know and understand what they need to do to provide financially for themselves throughout their lives. So we've been blessed with being able to again bring physicians to the United States to visit our chapters and reinvigorated that was a very active program prior to Madoff as well.
I want to thank Marcy Natan for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Commend you again on the Hadassah magazine, which is one of the best Jewish publications out there. And wish you continued success in reviving Hadassah, making it appeal to a younger demographic as well. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community.
Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be a surprise in honor of our 13th anniversary show. Our playout this morning comes from the late Theodore Bekel, a song called Yussel der Klezmer. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, an easy fast for Tisha B'Av, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Az yavosol klezmer spiel soy fasimche tan di chevre vi achvale in yam me hulet me springt und me tanzt und me singt ay di di ay di di ay dam ay di dam ay di dam ay 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 di 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 dam spielt mit sein Fiedel in Re-